This program is a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and is brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.
97 Gold presents Your Money with Fay Bagby. Sound advice to help your money grow. Now, here's Fay Bagby on 97 Gold.
Good morning.
Well, good morning, Fay. How are you?
I'm fine. It's a little chilly out, but, you know, that's a good sign that fall is really here.
Well, yeah, it's that wonderful time of year, the crisp mornings and then the semi-warm afternoons without the heat waves. It's that nice in-between stage between desert heat and frozen winters.
There you go. And I'm praying that we don't have a winter like we did last winter.
Ooh.
In February.
Oh,
if we lose all of our bushes again and all this, it's not going to be good.
Oh, no, it won't. Lord, that was rough. Man.
It was rough, and it's taken everybody that I know all summer and fall to replace all their bushes, all their main plants. And a lot of them, you know, they were out in the summer. And then everybody said the best planting time is the fall anyway.
Well, that's true.
So,
you know, I forget about that there's seasons. You know, when things happen, you can't just magically just replace it. Sometimes you have to wait until the right season for these things.
That's right. And, you know, I lost three big trees this year. I don't know what happened. I mean, these three big trees just died. And so I've been looking for at least one big tree. And the city of Argyle is giving away trees for Arbor Day.
Really?
And so I signed up. And then somebody was laughing and said, Fay Bagby, how big do you think that tree's going to be? Oh, my gosh.
Wait, teeny
now,
tiny.
See, I'm thinking this 6-foot tree, right?
No.
I'm thinking a 6-foot, 8-foot tree. Everybody said, Fay, you can carry it home in a bucket.
Yeah. It'll be in like a plastic cup.
It may be in a plastic cup. Oh, my gosh. So we know this is going to be a very small tree. I can put it in and the navigator won't be a problem at all, right?
Yeah. Yeah. They start out very, 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 very small. What happened to the trees? What was it, the storm or was
I don't
it...
know. I had an arborist out here and he said they might have got their feet too wet because of the sprinkler system. He said some native trees do not like a lot of water.
Really?
I did not know that. I thought they weren't getting enough water. And but he said a lot of our native trees do not like all that water. They're not used to that much water. And with the sprinkler system up here, that might be what killed them.
Oh, no.
And, yeah. So, you know, I just don't know.
Well, man, that's a situation. I didn't realize that was even possible. And you lost three trees.
And yes, I lost three. And so I asked the people at City Hall when I was asking them about being able to get this tree, because I thought I was really doing something, you know, because I said, I had this vision of this beautiful big tree. And they said that I might should get a red oak. They're very hardy, and they don't take a lot of maintenance. He said some of the other trees are hard to grow. And so he said I recommend the red oak. And he said, I don't know how many we have. He said, you need to sign up right away. And when I signed up, there was one red oak left.
Really?
Yeah, so I signed up for that.
Is that the little small
but
tree?
They had several. Well, I'm sure it is. I'm sure it's 6 inches high. But I signed up for it anyway.
Well, then like 100 years, it'll be nice.
That's right. 100 years from now, it won't make a bit of difference.
No.
You know?
You'll never know. It started out in a tree.
No, I'll never know. But I wanted a tree, And I had no idea. I just had this imaginary tree in my mind. That it was going to be big and beautiful, you know.
Yeah.
I should have known. How would the city have all these trees to give away if they were big? You know, I didn't think about that.
Yeah, they're not driving around in a truck with a big crane on it and lifting these gigantic forest trees.
That's right. Arbor Day, you know, is coming up. So on Arbor Day, I'll pick up my little tree.
Do you have to go get it?
I have to go get it. And they put instructions on the city website how to plant them.
Really?
Yeah, I saw the instructions. They had a little video.
Really? A video and everything?
This is how to plant. Yeah, they said, this is how to plant your tree.
Well, that's helpful. Wow.
Yeah, so I said, well, that's good. We'll do the video, and we'll go out there and plant this tree.
In other words, you dig a hole and you throw it in the ground.
That's what I think. Then you put the dirt back on top of it. Then in the coming years, we'll go out and look at it from time to time.
Yeah. And make sure the landscapers know that it's there so they don't mow over it.
That's right. That this thing is really a tree. It doesn't look like it. It's small, but leave it alone. Let's let it grow.
It looks more like a plant right now.
I think it's going to look like a little small plant.
Well, at least it'll be fun watching it grow. That'll be nice.
That's right. And,
so you lost three, but you got one.
That's right. We lost three. You've got one. They came and chopped them up and took all that wood away.
Wow. All right.
Yeah, I had to do that. I couldn't leave the wood out there.
Did they actually have to take them down, or did they, like, fall down?
No, they had to take them down.
All right, so the roots weren't rotted, or, you know, they weren't in danger of, like, falling on the house or anything.
No, they weren't. They've just, they lost all their leaves. They were bare, and you could tell they were dead.
Yikes.
Because I had them come and check to see if I could revive those big, beautiful trees. They said, they're dead, they're gone, you might as well just cut them down.
Wow. That's a shame, because it takes a long time to grow those things.
That's right. And they were big trees, great big. Mm. And but they were up here by the house where the sprinkler was on them a lot.
Yeah.
So apparently, some trees that are native to Texas do not like water.
I had no idea.
They don't need it. See, I thought they needed water, but apparently they did not need water.
Yeah, I'm like you. I would have thought everything needed water.
Yeah, but apparently some trees need very little.
Wow.
And they have deep roots, and they didn't need it, and I was watering them all the time thinking I was really helping. And I watered them right out of existence.
You drowned them.
Took care of that. I drowned them is what I really did.
Well, that's a shame. At least they're going to fix it, though. And you're getting
them
replaced. Or at least one of them, anyway.
I'm getting one.
Yeah. And then by next, probably within several years, it'll be big enough for pretty fall foliage. So this time of year, in, say, 5 years, maybe, you might have some pretty leaves off of it. That'll be nice.
It will be nice when it shows up, yes.
Yeah.
Wow. I was going to use it for a shade. To have picnics out there. Because the other one, we had picnics under it all the time.
Yeah.
And so now we have no trees for our picnics.
Oh.
So it's going to be a long time.
You may have to get like a canopy or something like that for a while.
Well, we could do that, yes.
A canopy or like one of those arbor things, that like the structures with the lines in it. I forget what they're called.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I'd be good for a picnic. At least until the trees grow. Or get like a gazebo.
Well, but we have a big gazebo.
Oh, well, there you go. Well, that's perfect.
Yeah, I have a beautiful gazebo that some people in Farmersville built for me years ago.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Well, then that'll be great. That's nice.
I love gazebos. And so I had these people build it and come install it.
Perfect.
And I checked all over Texas for a gazebo. And these people built the nicest ones, and their prices were good. And it's a family-owned business. And
really?
The owner came to see about it, make sure it's structurally sound, make sure everything was right. And
wow.
So, yeah, they were very nice people, did a good job.
Wow. That's really, really cool. You know, it's,
yeah.
Especially when you got people that are behind it, you know, because you know that any kind of those family businesses, you know, they always put a little bit of extra effort into it. So, you know, it's just not like a kit that you get at the store and put together. You know, they custom make these things and, you know, make sure everything fits right. And they, you know, come out and inspect it. That's really, really great. That's awesome.
Yeah, they did. And they did make a lot of kit ones, but I didn't want any part of that. And I saw the ones that you just kind of haphazardly put together.
Yeah.
But this is a big gazebo, and you could see, you know, 15 people in it probably.
Oh, good Lord. It's a big, big one.
It's a big gazebo.
Wow. Well, that's neat.
Yeah, and so it is neat. You can go out there. You could sing, or, you know, have a sing-along. You could do a lot of things in there.
Yeah. I wouldn't start like a bonfire. Bonfires are always fun in the fall, especially when it gets cool. Roasted marshmallows.
I don't think so in my gazebo.
Not inside
oh
there.
Oh, my gosh.
You'll burn it down.
No. That's right. And at Christmas, we put all the lights up in the gazebo also.
Oh, wow. I bet that's pretty.
Yeah, it is. So we leave those on lots of times late at night. And so it you can see it, you know, and so it's really pretty.
Wow, that is really pretty. Go out there and sing Christmas songs and stuff.
That's right. And in the summer, you can go out there, take the grandkids out. They can play in the gazebo. A gazebo is just a great thing.
Yeah.
It's an all-around good place to have.
Yeah, good year-round outdoor fun.
That's right. Absolutely.
Nice. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And our website, AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
The economy over the last week or two, a lot of people are getting a little bit nervous, to say the least. I saw some fourth quarter predictions coming out the other day, and they were saying things about like holiday shopping. Supplies, obviously, you know, distribution channels are disrupted. Supplies are disrupted. Inflation is in full swing. And so they were saying that a lot of times, you know, normally we would plan on starting our Christmas shopping in about, 5 weeks or so around Thanksgiving, you know, Black Friday and all that. But they're saying now that if people haven't already started their Christmas shopping, they may be in some trouble because of supplies in situations like that. So with all that in mind, do you think anything to worry about as far as, you know, some kind of maybe financial event, shall we say, between now and the end of the year? What do you think?
Well, you know, I don't know. I mean, everything seems to be a little bit uncertain right now, as you know.
Yeah.
Everybody just doesn't know. They say gas is going to go maybe to $5 a gallon.
Really?
And that will affect Christmas and Thanksgiving also, if it does go up that much. You know, everything is going up right now. You know, oil is at $83 a barrel.
Yeah.
That's more than it's been in, 3 years?
Yeah.
So for the Permian Basin, that's a good thing because there will be more jobs, better pay again. Things will be on the move and on the rise. But now for the rest of the country, you know, they're not in that business. So it's not going to help them. The big cities is one that's going to get hurt because these people, have lower paying jobs. So the price of oil, the price of food and all this is going to affect them. They say that everything is higher at the grocery store than it's been in years and years.
Yeah, yeah. You can see those prices going up. And sometimes you run into a lot of empty shelves, too.
That's right. The other day when I ordered groceries and I was complaining because she just kept saying, you can't have this, can't have that. And then she sent me a picture of the shelves. And the shelves didn't have anything on them.
I know.
I mean, you know, there wasn't anything there. Yet HEB is coming to Dallas, Fort Worth. They're fixing to put in 5 stores here.
Really?
Now, I can't imagine why HEB, they're a lot smarter than I am, I'm sure. But they're putting all these stores here. And I thought we had enough grocery stores. I thought we had every kind of grocery store in the world. But no, they're putting them in Frisco and Dallas, Fort Worth, and there's one more, I think. I think there's 4 of them they're putting in.
I will tell you,
so
I do love.
Apparently, HEB knows something about our economy that we don't know.
Yeah, and you know, I suppose if they have more more stores, then that gives you more options. You know, if one location is out and there's another location that's, you know, a couple miles away, it would be much easier to just run over there, you know, to maybe find some items that you can't get, you know, at one location. It gives us more options. But boy, it is kind of scary though, especially when you see those empty shelves. Wow.
It is. Because everything is not available now, and they say it's just going to get worse because the supplies can't get here.
Yeah, we're starting to...
If you've seen the pictures of Los Angeles Harbor, where all those containers are stacked up. Now, some of the big companies said they were going to spend $2 million, hire their own trucks, hire their own transportation. They were going to get everything moving. They're going to get everything coming our way. But a lot of people just... They're holding their hands, wringing their hands, says, what are we going to do? We can't get our things to ship for Christmas, and they're on the docks. And they say the docks are going to be that way till spring. Well, I'm with the people that say, let's spend a couple of million and get our stuff here, because there's probably $20 or $30 million worth of merchandise just sitting there on the docks.
Wow, just not even moving.
That's exactly right.
You know, have you also noticed, speaking of supplies and groceries, have you noticed that there's starting to come some limits are starting to pop back in? So, you know, so when you like order it online, it says limit 2 or limit 1 or something like that. We're starting to see those start to pop up again, too.
And it's always paper products.
Yes.
Always. And I guess because they come from the great north, you know, is the reason. That's the only thing I can figure out.
Yeah.
And let me tell you about restaurants right now. They're changing their menus. One of the places we used to go, my son went there recently, and he said, Mother, they're down to 5 items.
Really?
You've got 5 things you can get. Used to, you might have had 20 or 30 things on the menu. He said they had 5 items you could order from.
Wow. Just because they can't get the ingredients and the supplies, I guess.
Yeah, and the help. They don't have the help and they don't have the ingredients. So they have really cut everything down.
My goodness. You know, you see all this and it almost seems like a perfect storm for, because I remember, and what was it, a year and a half ago, I think? About a year and a half ago, where you would stand in line, you know, outside the store at like 4 in the morning and then hope that you were like one of the first couple people to get inside to get some paper products. It was a run. It was really, really scary. And it seems, I still remember it like yesterday. I wonder if all of these, you know, supply things and all the warnings that people are putting out right now, I wonder if that's going to, you know, create some kind of panic and people will start trying to hoard items again and you know, we go down that hole.
They probably will. And, you know, Bitcom was $64,000 yesterday.
Really?
Do you believe that? Bitcom was $64,000.
Wow.
We talked about it 3 weeks ago and it was, what, $48,000?
Yes.
It was 40-something thousand. It's 64,000 as of yesterday.
Wow. It just skyrockets.
It does. And I still don't know if it's worth anything. Nobody can figure it out for sure.
Yeah.
It's just the darndest thing. But people are taking it for payments.
Jeez.
So they're trading in it.
I still don't know enough about it. I know we talked about it and we tried to figure it out.
We don't know. We know you have to have a ton of electricity. If you don't have electricity, you can't make Bitcom. You've got to have all this. And they keep talking, as we did, about Texas is going to be one of the biggest players because we have all this electricity available.
Yeah. Yeah. Weren't they going to put a location? Was it Austin? or?
No, I don't remember. There's two towns in the middle Texas, yeah. that were doing it, and they'd already sold thousands of acres of land.
Yeah, it was just huge.
It was huge, and that one guy said he was spending $25 million on his factories. It started two factories down there. And remember that one town used to have a factory, so they had all the electricity and a power plant. You have to have a power plant.
Yeah.
And so that's why Texas looked like it would be a great place for the Bitcoms. So we hope it's successful and doesn't bite the ground.
Yeah, really. I mean, as big as it is, it's sounding kind of, you know, not like people are, you know, switching over to a whole nother, form of money. But it's just one of these things that people don't really know what it is, but it's got a lot of traction for some reason.
That's right. And all the big boys are doing it. And then the sharks are out there, too. So you still have to be really careful because we don't understand it. I don't think anybody does. They're playing with it, but I don't know if they understand it. But changing the subject temporarily, how many people do you think ended up at the State Fair of Texas?
Oh, geez. I don't know. Tons, I would guess.
2.2 million.
Oh, wow. That's huge.
That's a heck of a run.
Yes.
It is huge. And all those vendors that had missed out the year before, I feel good about them because – you know, that's what they do. They wait all year long for that 4 to 5 weeks of selling at the fair. That's what they do every year. A lot of them have jobs everywhere else, but the families come together for the state fair, and they make all these products to sell just during that short period of time. And so I think it's great because last year they did not make a dime. The state fair was shut down, and so this year they had 2.2 million visitors. Can you imagine how they cleaned up this year? They sold a lot of food.
That is fantastic. I hope that kind of helps make up a little bit from last year. Hopefully.
I hope it did, too. And, of course, Fletcher's Corny Dogs were there in style, as usual.
Oh,
there's no telling how many hundreds of thousands of corn dogs they sold during that time. Those are the biggest, and they are the best.
They really are. And, you know, state fair food, it's different when you eat it there. I mean, you can get, like, you know, frozen things and, you know, stuff like that at the store. But they're just – and they're delicious, but they're just not the same when you're actually, like, at the fair itself eating all that stuff. It tastes different
for some reason. The fair is different. You're going down the midway eating a corn dog. Oh, my gosh. You got plenty of mustard. It's a heck of a day.
Yes. And if you're not wearing half your lunch on your shirt – When you leave, you didn't do it right.
That's right. If you don't have any mustard on you, you didn't do something right. I agree. Oh, my gosh. Well, anyway, the economy, is up and down, but we hope it goes up and stays up. They're still giving all these warnings, you know. If you read all these reports, you know, it will sometimes, some days frighten you.
Yeah.
But we just have to do the best we can, invest as solidly as we can, and be diversified. You've got to be diversified. I would not want everything in the stock market, even though it's up right now, it's going up. Everybody just, they think it's never going to go down. It's going to be la-la land here on in.
Yeah.
But remember, we've been through this many, many times over the years. It doesn't always stay up. If it did, nobody would invest in anything but the stock market. Had you thought about that?
That's true.
If it never went down, people would not have all the options they have today, right? So always remember that we've been through this ever so many years where it just suddenly has a crash, as we call it.
Yeah.
I hope it doesn't happen. I hope that I shouldn't even mention it. But, you know, I've been around quite a while. And I've seen it the different times it's went down and over the years and how many people got hurt. So I'm saying be diversified, be cautious, have some of your money in something solid. Don't have all of it on the line every day.
It's kind of like
when you play, when you go to the horse races, you believe that horse is going to win. And sometimes that the horse ruins every time. But then how about the time that he didn't and you lost all that money, or in Vegas?
Yeah.
Same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, I mean, I think people are, you know, because you started to hear some rumblings, you know, a couple of months ago that there may be some kind of an event by the end of the year, and now we're in, you know, especially the last week or two, we start to hear these things about all these different, you know, things that are going to create uncertainty, and when things get uncertain, people start to react, and things start to really kind of shake up a little bit. So I think maybe the signs are there. Whether it actually happens or not, you know, obviously we hope not. But, you know, I think a lot of people are starting to explore other options besides, you know, the stock market. And it sounds like a lot of people have really, the ones who have been investing in life settlements for all these years, they know it's solid, and they're really, they've been doing this forever. And I think a lot of people are probably starting to think about something like that a little bit more seriously, because of what might be happening in the future. Are you seeing that as well?
Yes, and I think another thing is the age you are. If you're 60 years old, you may not want to stay in the stock market. You know, if you're 40 years old, it's a different story. You're young, you can remake the money if you lose it. But lots of times a 60-year-old doesn't want to take the chance of losing the money if we have a dive. If the stock market takes one of its spells and goes the other way. And, of course, a lot of it dependent right now. We've got all these bills in Congress they're trying to pass, these crazy things they're trying to do. It could affect us a lot,
yeah.
You know? If we suddenly find that all this becomes law, we may be in a serious trouble, you know?
Yeah.
So you have to be as conservative as you possibly can to get through life right now. A lot of people have got enough money. If it goes down, it's not going to hurt them. You know, they've got millions. If they lose a million, so what? But most of us out here in the real world could not afford to lose our savings or our nest egg or our 401k or our IRAs. So the best way to do it is to be diversified, have some money, like in life settlements. You know, a life settlement is solid. You know what you're going to make going in. You know what your interest rate's going to be. You know approximately how many months it's going to be. And, you know, we've been doing this a long, long time. And it all works out in the end. You know, all these things, you know, we have maturities every few months. So we know it works. We know that over the years, all of our customers who started with us years ago are still with us.
Yeah.
So if they weren't making money, they wouldn't still be here. They'd go somewhere else. Now, a lot of people panic, and they have a panic attack if something goes over. Oh, my gosh, I've got to take my money out because that went over. That's not the way to look at it. The way to look at it is, okay, it went over. When it matures, then maybe it won't happen the next time. And that's exactly the way it works. It may go over, but then the next one may come in early. So it will balance out in the end. You will make money. It's not always fast. It's conservative. It's realistic. You're not going to get rich overnight.
Well, that's true. But it's also got that, and I hate to use the word safety, but it's got that conservative layer to it, because if something does happen to the stock market, say, and people are in life settlements, it's not going to affect it at all, because the life insurance policy is its own entity, and it's not affected. You know, how much, when the policy matures, the amount that the insurance company pays out has nothing to do with any other factors. The stock market, anything overseas, there are no variables that change the amount. It is what it is, and it stays steady and solid.
That's exactly right. It's not affected by Washington. That's the best way to put it.
Ah, yeah.
It is not affected by all the things going on up there. Our dollar is. Our stock market is affected every day by what they read, what they hear. When they hear $3.5 trillion, sometimes it sucks the wind right out of the stock market. When they hear that Iran is doing ballistic missiles or something, or North Korea. That affects the stock market. Everything affects it. Everything they hear. Washington is a scary place.
Yeah.
You know, when they hear all the things going on there, people have a tendency to panic.
It's like a giant haunted house.
It is. I mean, it just whooshes the air right out of us, you know? I just don't know of anybody lately that has gotten rich in the stock market. I just don't know them. I know people in New York do a lot better than they do out here.
Yeah.
And then we find out all the time, like that guy the other day, he was with one of the big brokerage houses. Now, the rules are, if you're trading for a client or somebody, you can't go in front of them and make that deal. In other words, if you know something about a company, you know these two companies are fixing to merge. That's insider information. You cannot trade on it. You can't do a thing. You better leave it alone. Well, this guy wouldn't leave it alone. He knew about all this. And his brokerage house was saying, okay, we're going to do this for John Smith. We're going to do this for this guy and this one. Here is their trades. He went in ahead of them because he had insider information. He made a total of $28 million.
Wow.
But then they caught him.
Uh-oh.
Then they caught him. They figured out what he'd done. You know, when you make that much money, they're going to be checking you. They're going to be saying, did he do it legitimately?
Yeah.
And no, he didn't. He played ahead of everybody.
Wow.
And, you know, people up in New York, they know things we don't know. They know the companies. They do have insider information. There ain't any doubt about it. And they whether they act on it or not is another thing. So there's so many rules and regulations if they play by the books, if they play, you know, heads up. And we're out here, you know, just trying to make a living. Most people don't have time to follow all this. They hire someone else to do it. Now, there's a lady in the news this week. Her broker had lost her so much money, she was down so far. She said, you know, I can't do any worse than him. I've lost 50%. And when I was reading this on Yahoo Finance, I read her story, and she said she lost all this money, over 50% of her money with the stockbroker. She said, you know, I can do a better job. She started trading on her own, and now she's made a lot of money.
Really?
And she figures out he wasn't paying attention to her. He probably wasn't even there every day.
Wow. You know?
He was off doing something else and lost her a lot of money. And I hear this all the time, that when you lose a lot of money, the stockbroker wasn't paying attention. You know?
Man.
He's getting paid just to churn that account sometimes. And out here in the heartland, you know, we're just trying to make a living, you know. We work every day. We pay our bills. We go to church. I mean, the normal things a person would do.
Yeah.
And New York City, it's a whole different deal.
Yeah. They're not living the same life.
No, they're living an imaginary life.
Yeah.
That's what I call it, imaginary, you know.
They're in some kind of alternate reality.
It's an alternate reality every day. So when we invest money, you know, we want to know the people that we're doing business with. We want to know that they're legitimate. That's why we have the bank handle their money every day. Nevada Trust handles everybody's money. Their account is at the bank. It's not in our account. And I think that's really important, because in Wall Street, it's not that way. They have access to your account. They're doing the trading. You're not doing it. And most people don't even know what they're invested in.
That's true.
You know, a lot of them have those REITs, which we've talked about many times. And they're not going to get any money out of that for 30 years.
No, they're locked in for a while.
Yeah, because, you know, we tried to take the money out for those people. And the REIT just told us, go away. Go away.
That's a nice way to put it.
That's what they told us. Yeah. It'll be years before you ever see that money.
Yeah. Don't even think about it.
Don't even think about it. You're not going to be able to take it out. And, oh, by the way, when he said, well, what about my dividends? There is no dividends. We're not paying you any dividends, so forget that.
Wow. Surprise.
See, people out here, that's right, are not sophisticated enough to know what they're doing, is what I'm trying to say.
Well, it's a very difficult investment to be in, and it, unless you're in for the long haul, it's just not. It just doesn't seem, you know. And that's the great thing about life settlements is because you only, you know, you're only buying policies that are, you know, what, 24, 30 months usually is about the top, right? And so you're looking at quick turnarounds, and so I think that's always been one of the big things that people like so much about life settlements.
They do, and they like that when we call them or send them an email and say, okay, you have a maturity. You've got a maturity. And they love that because they can reinvest. At the end of the year, they know how much they've made. They can pull up a statement. We can get them a statement right away and say, okay, this is how much you've made. This is how many policies you've made. And this is how much you've yet to go. It's a simple equation. It's a life insurance policy. We're investing in life insurance policies on people that have stage 4 cancer. And we send them the health information just like I get it. And lots of times we'll go back and we'll read all that. On that one, if you remember, I went back and read the 750 pages on it.
Ooh, wow, that's a lot.
And I went back because we was unsure. And then, if I'm unsure about anything, I'll call that company, like 21st, who does most of the reports, and say, give me some help with this. Yeah. Or if it's Haversham, who we buy a lot of policies from, I'll say, walk me through this with your doctor there on staff. Am I missing something? Yeah. And they'll always tell me, this person's really sick or this person's not that sick. And they'll say, look for this way. So there's a lot of things that we're looking for every day on these policies before we invest them.
A lot of information
and
a lot of resources.
Good.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we're averaging 22%. Some of them are making 14% on a policy, 18%, different amounts. But we always get paid. The insurance companies always pay us. So that's what's different about the stock market. You don't always get paid. We always get paid. We know how much we're going to get, and we do it over and over again. We reinvest and reinvest for the people and make them money.
And when you say,
and when
like,
you've got a 401k, it's really important, or an IRA.
Yeah. You know, when you refer to things like 14%, 20%, you know, 30%, people know that going in. It's not like something's going to be, well, you know, we went in at 20%, but we actually only ended up making 14%. People know that going in because it's 1% a month, and it's just whenever, you know, the life expectancy says the policy is going to mature, that's where that comes from. It's very, very simple. It's all based on science and numbers from doctors.
That's right. And so, you know, we have the best of all worlds. You know, we've got a life insurance policy. We know that it can be redeemed. It's going to be redeemed at face value. We're not going to have to discount it. We're not going to take less money. We're going to get our money every time. And so that's important. We know how much we're going to get back. We're going to get that principal. We're going to get our interest. And they pay interest on the money. If they're late giving it to us, and I don't know if people even notice that it's more than what they've got coming because they got extra interest on it.
Really?
The time between when they get it and when the check comes to us, lots of times they'll pay us extra interest during that time. So if it takes 60 days, we're going to get 60 days of interest. Or 30 days, 45 days. Lots of times we get extra interest above what they show they were going to get.
Wow. I didn't realize that. That's exciting. Wow.
Yeah, it is. So they get that extra money whether they know it or not.
Wow.
Whether they realize they got it.
All right. It sounds like it's a good time also to get into life settlements. We'll kind of talk about that here in just a few minutes. But for right now, this is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is...
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website, AmericanFinancialMidland.com, has got great things on it. Check us out.
And every Saturday morning around this time, we always get into trivia. What is our topic this morning?
It's William T. Gebhardt, a German. He is the inventor of chili powder.
Really?
Yes, a German. He came here in 1883.
Wow.
He was the son of Frederick and Wilhelma Gebhardt. When they came to the United States, he only spoke German. His parents only spoke German. They settled in the German town of New Braunfels in 1885. So he learned to speak English and learned to read in English. He married a girl named Rosemary Kraskonski, but he had a passion for cooking. So in 1892, he opened a cafe in the back of a saloon at the corner of West Antonio and Castell Street. It was known as the Phoenix Saloon by the 1890s. He owned this place for 4 years. He started developing his famous chili powder. He first called it Tampico Dust. He would flavor his stews with the spice, and he became an expert on Mexican cuisine. He spent his free time going to San Antonio to enjoy the local Mexican food. So he was experimenting all this time. He was grinding up herbs and peppers, and he was cooking a variety of chilies for his customers, because chili was a popular dish even back then. So he was using fresh peppers. He later discovered that by drying his chili peppers and grinding them into a flavored powder, he could keep the powder fresh for months.
Huh.
Then he learned that the American Indians had used ancho peppers. So he began importing ancho peppers by the wagon load from Mexico. He would store enough peppers to last the entire year. He spent years developing this recipe, known as chili powder. In 1896, he was peddling bottles of it, and he called it Gebhardt's Eagle Brand Chili Powder. So he registered the name Eagle Brand and trademarked it. Can you imagine people were trademarking stuff in the 1800s?
I didn't even realize that was even a thing back then.
I didn't either. In 1898, he moved to San Antonio and opened a factory on West Commerce. And he called it Chili Powder Manufacturer. So his brother-in-law, Albert Kraskonski, he went to him and said, look, I need the financing for this chili powder. So he was selling it here in Texas, door-to-door almost. And then in 1908, he published a cookbook called Mexican Cooking. He was going to introduce and educate the American public about Mexican food. And so that was a success. And then he got, this was hilarious to me, he received a butcher's license in 1911.
What?
Well, that additional qualification enabled him to rename it to Gebhardt's Chili Powder Company. He started diversifying. So he started canning chili and then tamales.
Ooh.
Yeah. Now, during this time, he was selling products in the United States. He became so famous, he was selling in London, South Africa, and Canada. By 1915, he was doing $1 million profit.
Really?
This is in 1915.
My goodness.
He was producing 18,000 bottles of chili powder per day.
Wow.
The largest manufacturer of chili powder in the United States.
I can't imagine that much profit in 1915. That would just be off the charts.
In 1915, $1 million.
Wow.
So from 1900 to its present place, it's the largest manufacturer of chili products exclusively in the world.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, this guy was so smart. He was in 19 countries across the globe.
Unbelievable.
And all he wanted to do was to learn to cook Mexican food.
Yeah. Wow. Man.
And so it eventually was known as Gebhardt Mexican Foods Company. And a lot of this stuff had never been sold in grocery stores ever before. But it's an amazing story. He came from Germany, didn't speak a word of English, learned to speak English. But what I loved was on the labels of Gebhardt's Eagle Chili Powder, it says, this is seasoning for chili con carne.
Really?
Yeah, that's what it says on the front.
Wow.
Yeah. And he wanted it to be available for cooks year-round. That's how he learned to make chili powder out of those peppers, because he said, you know, there's no way you can have that many fresh peppers, you know?
Wow. I can't even imagine how, you know, he just wanted to do something simple, ended up with a product in 19 different countries, $1 million in 1915. I just can't even, man, talk about not planning big enough. Jeez.
Yeah, and when he learned that the American Indians had used ancho peppers, you know, that's when he began importing them by the wagon load.
Wow.
Yeah, developing all this from Mexico. And here he's German, and he became an expert on Mexican food.
That also is shocking.
I mean, that's pretty – it is shocking, isn't it? I mean, this German learned all this and then put out several cookbooks on Mexican food.
I do like the name Tampico Dust, though. I think that's pretty cool.
Tampico Dust. You like that, huh?
Yeah, I like that. I would buy that.
But of course you would. He registered the Eagle brand name and trademarked it. Now, this is in 1896 he trademarked this.
And I didn't even know they did that kind of business back then.
I didn't either. And I don't know when the little boxes and the bottles, you know, they were little, looked pretty small to me, but then they had, they put it in the little box, you know, the glass bottle in the box and sold it. But Gerhardt became an international name, an international company. He lived to 1956.
Really?
From 1875 to 1956.
My goodness. You know, and it's just like that's one of those things that you just take for granted and have no idea that there's even any kind of backstory. You just think, you know, I just showed up in a bottle, you know, someplace. And you don't really think about, you know, all the things that happened to get to the place where it is now, and something that we use all the time. Don't even think about it. Amazing.
And it shows you how smart people can be and what they can do with nothing. I mean, you know that those peppers couldn't have cost much back in the 1800s.
Oh, yeah.
When he was importing them. And then he got his brother-in-law to put up a little bit of seed money, you know, to really get it off the ground. And he never looked back. I mean, how did he know how to sell it all over the United States and 19 other countries?
That's just shocking. And to get the word out, you know, that long ago to 19 different countries, not only just to get the products there, but to let people know, hey, this new thing exists and you can use it all the time and keep it in your kitchen. It's shocking. I mean, now you have like social media and you have, you know, all kinds of distribution channels. But back then you didn't have all these things. You had boats and, you know, horse and buggy and carriages. It's really, really, it's fascinating what he did with nothing.
And then his main company, he named it Gebhardt Mexican Foods Company. I mean, you know, this is a German. And
Bratwurst, I could see that. German beer, I could see that. But but Mexican food,
yeah,
I don't know.
And he learned to do all this. And the San Antonio paper did a story on him. Of course, we had newspapers back then, but this is a long, long time ago. You know, that they did a story on him in the San Antonio paper.
Amazing.
It's just amazing to me. Yeah, it's amazing. And he retired in 1936 from the business. And it doesn't tell who took over.
So he spent a good... probably about 20 years or so in retirement?
Yeah. He died in 56. He retired in 36. Yeah.
Wow. I'm just shocked, really.
Yeah, it's a shocking story that this guy could come from Germany, taught himself to speak English and to write English, and then became so enthralled with cooking, and he was in the back of that saloon. You know, had a little restaurant in the back of the saloon. I liked that. And, you know, and learning Mexican food. It's just an amazing story. and called Tampico Dust.
I like that.
Called it.
I love that name. It's just, it's fascinating how people, you know, that get so resourceful, you know, and they use what they've got, and then, you know, they get a little help here or there, but it's just like, I love how they make the most of what little resources people have and create these gigantic monster products. It's really inspiring, really.
Yeah, and those little ancho peppers, you know, made him famous. I mean, he just started getting them by the wagon load, chopping them up, you know, drying them out, and he'd get enough for a year at a time.
Wow.
And he was experimenting every day, trying to improve on that powder he had, and the people loved the flavor, and he just experimented until he came up with chili powder. It's an amazing story.
Fascinating. Next time I go to the spice cabinet, I'm going to think about that, and I'm going to look at that bottle and just, you know, kind of think, man, there actually is a history besides just, you know, some company put something in a bottle and we put it in our food. It's
and
really...
we wouldn't have it if it wasn't for old Gerhardt, let me tell you.
I know, and thank goodness for old Gerhardt, because I'd love me some chili powder.
And a lot of people have copied it, but I bet it's not as good as the original.
Oh, you know it. The original is always the best. Man.
Yeah. Mm-mm. I hate substitutes. But anyway, that's our story for today.
Amazing. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
We're talking about all the benefits of life settlements a few minutes ago, and it seems like one of these things that might be a good time for a lot of people to perhaps start thinking about some other types of investment other than Wall Street, because of the way that the things are in the situation that we've already laid out. So what is involved with getting into a life settlement? You know, I guess, first of all, and I know that's kind of a loaded question. You could take it a thousand different ways. But first of all, what would somebody need to do? They first of all, they need to be accredited, I guess.
Yes, you must be accredited. So you've got to either make $200,000 a year or you have to be worth $1 million, whichever way.
Okay.
It's got to be one of those two ways. So then... you've got to have either a regular account, you can have a joint account with your wife, you can have a 401k that you're moving money over, you can have an IRA or a Roth. A lot of people that have an IRA are changing them over to Roths because you're not going to have to pay taxes on those Roths. I had a client the other day, said, Faye, I'm ready to invest fully now. He said, I've changed everything over to a Roth. He said, I'm ready to go.
Wow. We don't talk about that very often, but okay. All right, cool. That's good to know.
So that's a good thing to know.
So once people are accredited, and a lot of people, you know, when they're adding up, you know, their assets, a lot of people will forget about a 401k or they now realize maybe some property that they have, you know, doesn't count. You've had people before that have started to kind of run some numbers through their brains. They don't think they're anywhere near accredited. As it turns out, once they pull everything out of the back of the closet that they maybe forgotten about, didn't think they could count, it turns out they're more than accredited. A lot of times it's a surprise, and it is worth kind of going through and making sure that everything is accounted for, right?
That's exactly right. Yeah, you've got to add everything up, say, okay, here's what I've got. Yes, I am accredited. Or no, I'm not. I need to be in annuities. We're doing a lot of annuities right now. A lot of people that we did annuities for 10, 11, 12 years ago, those annuities have ran out. Now we're changing them over to a different company. They're going to make more money. They've made money over the years, but this is going to make them a little more money than they have been making. So we're making that change. So if you're non-accredited, you can do annuities. You still have to have we still have to look at your debt to your income and make sure your debt's not overwhelming your income. So you have to be qualified even for that, but the qualifications are a lot different. So, you know, you need to call us and talk to us, see where you fit in, see what we can do for you.
It's good to know that there are a number of different options. You know,
that's true. And, you know, I had one of our clients has passed away suddenly. His wife is going to inherit his accounts. So we're getting that changed over.
You know, I know we talk about life settlements so often, but it's good to know, you know, there are other options. People don't necessarily, because I think a lot of times people, they may be close or they may be really interested in a life settlement, but they're not quite accredited yet. So, you know, they can use other, you know, tools, other investments to get to the point where they are accredited if they wanted to make that leap into life settlements.
That's
so,
right.
And you have people that do that all the time. And people should also know, though, that with a life settlement, just like anything else, there are a couple of big risks. I know you always like to cover the three big risks so that people know going in what they may be, what they, you know, what may happen. What's the first biggest risk?
The biggest risk is it can go over. You have to be prepared that some of these are going to go over. Don't have a panic attack. Just say, okay, that particular one or those two or three went over. The next three probably won't go over, but you have to be prepared. If it goes over, don't panic and say, oh, my gosh, I want out. My policy went over. Your policy hadn't done anything. It's still sitting right there. The money's still in the policy, but you're going to have to pay some premium. So that's the biggest risk. The next one is it's not cash until they die. Mm-hmm. You can't just say, cash me out.
You have to wait for the policy to mature.
That's right. So if you're unsophisticated and non-qualified, that's why they won't let you do this if you're not qualified, because people who are non-qualified have panic attacks. And they might say, oh, my gosh, you know, it's went over. I need to get out. Well, and you can't until you get the cash, okay?
That would be me. And the third biggest risk. What's the last one?
And the last one is if a life insurance company ever went under. Life insurance companies now are worth billions and billions, and they're all merging right now. So that's not really a risk anymore. If a life insurance company got in any kind of trouble whatsoever, somebody would buy it, as I always say, before 5 o'clock.
Yeah. Okay. So one thing I noticed that you didn't mention in risks is if the stock market goes down, if there is a market crash, if something happens around the globe that affects, you know, things like that. I noticed that was not one of the risks. And that's got to be one of the biggest things that people are looking at right now, especially when they're looking for more conservative investments where, you know, they could lose literally everything. We could have another 2008, you know, and people that are in life settlements don't have to worry about that. That's got to be one of the biggest assets right now for the life settlement.
Yeah, it is. It is a tremendous asset because it can't go down. You're not going to lose your money, and you don't have that risk of the market loss. And that's a big risk in the market. As you get older, you cannot stand the risk. I have a lot of people that come to me and say, "Hey, I'm older now. I cannot take the risk. I need every bit of my money for retirement." And if you're 70 years old, I would not be in the market at all if I was 70.
And one last thing before we wrap things up, how long does it take? So if somebody was to come over, they're a new investor, they want to get involved in life settlements, how long would it take to get, you know, set up, paperwork done, all that?
It usually takes a couple of weeks to get their money, because their money's probably coming from a brokerage house. It's coming from the their company, a 401k, it may be in an IRA somewhere. We may be transferring money. Or if they're writing a check, it's going to take a lot less time.
Okay. All right. It's a fairly easy process to get the ball rolling, though, I guess is the takeaway. So
it is easy, yes.
The big thing, though, is to get started, and the first thing that people have to do is go ahead and call, and they can come in, they can talk to you, they can ask questions. They don't have to be ready to go. You can run through the process again. You can go through all the information, if they wanted to start right away, they can do that as well. But they do have to call, and so one last time, Faye, what is your phone number for people to reach out?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. 3330. And our website, AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
You've been listening to Your Money with Faye Bagby. Sound advice to help your money grow. Listen for Your Money with Faye Bagby every Saturday morning at 10 here on 97 Gold.
This program has been a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and has been brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.